Good afternoon. I'm Kate Manahan. Thank you for joining me for the 161st edition of New Mainers Speak. This is a weekly half-hour program where you can hear firsthand about the lives of some of Maine's immigrants. During this show, we visit with individuals regarding their life stories and enduring hopes as New Mainers. Today, my guests are Nasser and Parivash Rohani. They were born in Iran, met while in exile in India, married in 1982, started a family, and then moved to the United States in 1983. They've had careers in technology and nursing, respectively. And to hear lots more about Parivash's story, you can listen back to the New Mainers Speak archives to shows 100 and 146. But today they've come in together as a couple to talk about their sister-in-law, who's been arrested and imprisoned for practicing the minority religion called Baha'i in Tehran, Iran, a predominantly Muslim state. Today, there are 80 million people living in Iran, and 99.4% of them are Muslim. The percentage of minority religions in Iran was about 10% before the revolution, but since that time in 1979, in Iran, the percentage has dropped and as the population's risen. Since 1979, people of Baha'i faith have been systematically persecuted as a matter of government policy. Baha'is are targeted, executed, imprisoned, and tens of thousands have lost jobs, access to education, and other rights, all solely because of their religious beliefs. So welcome to New Mainers Speak, Nasser and Parivash. And could you please start by telling us about your sister-in-law?
Hello.
Hello. Thank you so much, Kate, for inviting us. And yes, my sister-in-law was arrested recently, actually on October 21st. The significance of the day was that they were celebrating the 200th anniversary of the birth of the prophet founder of the Baha'i faith at their home. She actually was chairing the meeting, and according to what my brother said, I guess they heard a knock at their door, and four or five security guards entered their home and confiscated a lot of paperwork, a lot of things that, you know, their belonging. And after 2-3 hours of questioning and, you know, talking to different people who were attending the meeting, they arrested my sister-in-law. So she's a 43-44 years old woman, and my nephews are 10-13 year old. And, you know, at age 18, she, like other students in Iran, was not able to go to university. Although she really is motivated a student and very intelligent and passed the national exam with high score, but solely because of her religion, she was not able to pursue her education.
And is this your brother's sister?
That's my brother's wife.
Oh, that's your brother's wife. Oh, yeah. Yes, your brother's wife, your sister-in-law.
Yeah, my sister.
Gaziri? Oh, what's her name?
Ghazale. Ghazale? G-H-A-Z-A-L-E-H.
Ghazale.
Ghazale, yeah.
And tell us about her as a person. What's she like?
Well, I have never met Ghazale. And from all I hear, and I talk to her over Skype every once in a while, she is a very smart woman. She is very motivated, active, always smiling in the face, and she is truly a good mother. I have spoken with the two children they have, and they speak English. Believe it or not, you know, they teach them English. And, you know, in order for them to practice, I talk to them English, and they respond. And I see the, you know, the joy in the face of mother to see her children are learning another language, are able to speak to, you know, relatives half of the world apart. And I find her very loving, kind woman.
Do you know her personally, Parivash?
Yes, I know her because I traveled to Iran after 30 years. Of course, my brother got married, you know, and we were not really present at his wedding. But definitely going and visiting, I found her motivated, doing lots of community work in Iran, being involved in school, you know, with different projects, with neighbors, you know. She kind of really, she's a leader even in her own family. You know, they are three sisters, and definitely you can see that she has that leadership role and, you know, initiator and service-oriented and want to teach and raise her daughters as independent women, you know, teaching them English, you know, like my niece, she's doing rock climbing, learning English, you know, all kinds of, you know, music. She goes to musical classes. So she really is raising two independent young woman who would be ready to face challenges that, you know, exist in Iran, you know.
And yet that's seen as a threat to the state.
Exactly, yeah.
Because of her beliefs.
Yeah.
So she was arrested on the 21st of October, and shortly thereafter I heard from you, and you were very concerned about what was going to happen to your sister-in-law who had been imprisoned for being Baha'i, right?
Yes.
What's happened since then, since she's been released? Tell us a little bit about that journey for her, being imprisoned as a beautiful young mom.
Yeah. You know, first when I heard she was arrested, I was really worried because she's young and she's active and have two young daughters. So the first thing I did, I reached out to my extended family in Maine, the interfaith group, that people I knew. And it was really overwhelming, the support I received, especially from, you know, individual who knew me and people who I was connected because of interfaith. They said prayer in their churches, they lit up candles, they talk about it. And really, it was such a relief for me to know that this extended family that I really was able to connect with while I live in Maine are there to support me. And that was a big support even for my brother, because I mentioned to him that, you know, I have reached out to people and they are saying prayers. So it gives him a peace of mind knowing that. But of course, we were worried because he was in solitary confinement. And initially, she just was able to connect with my brother with 2 1-minute phone call. And then after that initial phone call, my brother did not know where she is, what is happening to her, because there was no news. And every morning, my brother would go to the court to different, you know, places that he would think maybe they have some news from his wife. And of course, they dealt with him being rude to him, you know, and nobody would give him a straight answer, to the point that he said one time when he went to the court, the person, the security guard, started yelling and screaming at him and saying, "Why you show up every day? We let you know what is happening to her." And he said, "I told them, you know, you have taken my wife away from me, mother of my two kids. You haven't taken a commodity, you know, you haven't taken my chair or I don't know, something, you know, useless that, you know, I shouldn't pay attention. This is my wife you're talking about." And he said at one point the security said to him, "You guys as Baha'is don't even have a right to live in this country. Why you are even here? You should leave the country." So my brother said that those kind of things are really harsh and very hard to deal with, because first of all, my wife was arrested with no reason, just because she was practicing her religion. She wasn't doing anything against the government. She was not promoting anything that was bad. So, you know, those kind of things, it would make me be scared and worried about my sister-in-law and my brother. And she also mentioned that every morning and afternoon they take her for questioning, and they would tell her that we confiscated your home, we confiscated your husband's business, or even we are going to put him in prison, your kids in prison. So she said emotionally and psychologically, it truly was very hard. And we heard all of this when she was released about a week ago on bail. But it really doesn't mean anything. Usually it takes after the bail and freedom, their temporary freedom, usually it takes between a year to two for them to hear about their sentences. And when I talked to her over the Skype, she believed that she probably would be sentenced to 3 to 5 years in prison.
I'm struck by how very different your response was, the community's response to you here versus the community's response to your brother there. You both have the same concern about the same person, and the world responds quite differently in the different locations. 3 to 5 years she'll be imprisoned after she's tried, likely, you said?
Yes.
So for being Baha'i, she, and no other reason, being a really good, upstanding citizen and fabulous mother, and practicing the Baha'i faith, which was a faith that was born after the Muslim faith, and then
and
you're seen
Iran.
As...
Iran. And it was really, this is a faith that was born in Iran.
Oh, interesting.
And it also, from the time of, you know, the faith was established in Iran, it was really, the government was against it. You know, the prophet founder of the Baha'i was banished from one country to another. So it's not a new phenomenon
right.
to the Baha'is. You know, this persecution has always been going on, but recently, of course, because it is a religious government, it's much more severe. And because the religious government running, you know, all kinds of organization in Iran, and they are in charge of everything, so the pressure is really much more severe. And Baha'is have no right to lawyer, to governmental job, so it's making it really much more difficult.
So that brings me to the point in the conversation when we were talking about this earlier, where I asked you, are they interested in leaving? And you explained to me that it's not that easy. And not everybody who, of course, has a disagreement with their government leaves their state. So can you help people understand, either of you, why it is that people plan to stay home in an oppressive government that's negatively affecting their lives?
Well, when we talk about a community, about 500,000 people, it is not as easy to move freely, easily from one place to the other. If we talk about a few hundred people, it's easy. But 500,000 people, 1 million people, it is very hard. And also, if, for example, Ghazale and her family wants to move out, then she has her parents, and there are so many things into the fact that, you know, we have to take into consideration. There are many families who financially cannot afford to move out, and then comes issue of visa and getting, you know, resettlement. There are issues of if there are young people planning to move, it is easier. But a person, suppose 40, 45 years old, who is almost half year into his occupation and life, now he has to go to and resettle in another country and learn language, learn profession, and resettle, it would be extremely hard. So these are so many, these and many other factors contribute for a lack of ease for masses of people to move out. And essentially, there is no reason for people, you know, who are born in one place, why should they be required to move out? It is a basic human right of every individual to live in his homeland, in the place that they want to live. And just because my ideology is different from yours shouldn't force me to move out of my place. You know, this is the subject that in America, we have, from early years of Constitution, we took into consideration. We know that in early years, the fathers of nation, you know, Andrew Jackson and Jefferson, both in their letters, they mentioned about oppression of majority on minorities. And we have to factor that into the, you know, democracy doesn't mean that majority can do whatever they want to do to minorities. And that in our constitution in America has been taken into account. But in a country like Iran, it has not been factored in. And the constitution of the country basically says that there are Muslims who are the major religion and Christians, Jews, and Zoroastrians who have some basic rights, and they are silent about the rights of other minorities, especially the Baha'is, who are larger in number than Christians, Jews, and Muslims and Zoroastrians in Iran combined.
Mm.
And also, I wanted to add, if, for example, the Baha'is who are freed on bail decide to leave Iran, then it gives the government reason that in international community they can say, see, we tell you that they are a spy, they are against the government. So that's the reason they are leaving the country. So most Baha'is, regardless of how long their sentence is, they would stay in Iran, they serve their sentences, and they leave. For example, one of my own cousins in Kermanshah, who was in prison for 7 years, last year he was freed, and then after serving his sentence in prison, now he went to England to continue his education. But he didn't do that before serving, actually, his sentence.
Wow, that's pretty profound. If you're just joining this conversation, welcome. You're listening to New Mainers Speak. I'm Kate Manahan, and my guests today are Nasser and Parivash Rohani. They've been talking about the intimidation and unlawful imprisonment of their sister-in-law, who lives in Tehran, with her husband and 11 and 13-year-old daughters. Interestingly enough, today, December 10th, happens to be United Nations International Human Rights Day. It commemorates the day in 1948 when the General Assembly of the United Nations adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And what a perfect time to talk about the situation for minorities in Iran and other countries around the world on this December 10th that just happened to fall when you were available. I love it. So let's take a look for a moment at these rights, these inalienable human rights that are related to the dignity of each human being without regard to their government's opinion. So we're going to read for you some of the basic human rights that are designed to protect people all over the world that were established after World War II as an effort to not ever lose a population like we did then.
Okay. So one of them is freedom of thought, conscience, and religion, right to education.
And we have freedom from discrimination, freedom of association, expression, assembly, and movement.
You have right to property, right to participate in cultural life, right to development, freedom from torture and cruel and inhumane or degrading treatment or punishments.
Right to vote and take part in government, fair working condition, adequate food, shelter, clothing, social security, right to health.
Freedom to have privacy in the family, home, or with personal correspondence. Right to seek, enjoy asylum of a safe home. Equal treatment under the law. The right to a nationality. And I want to underscore this right, to have a right to a nationality, because there was a time that Parivash and I lived in India, and we became stateless. We had no nationality. And that was a very, very difficult time for in our life, feeling we are like orphans, that no place accepts us, likes us, wants us. And that was a huge deal for us. And today we belong in this country. We are Americans, and we feel that we belong to a country. That freedom a right to have a nationality is huge for us.
It really matters. And we also have rights to fair trials and freedom from arbitrary arrest or detention. And so many of these that we've mentioned that are in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights are impingements for your sister-in-law in Iran today. So I wanted to be mindful of what this all means. And so many of these things are protections under many countries' laws. And yet so many people around the world are exposed to so many of these problems of arbitrary arrest and unfair trials and not able to participate in cultural life and belong to a state. Paravash, you've said before that much of the international immigration story is about human rights. Can you say some more about your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I feel really, I wish this Human Right Day would be something that it is in forefront of our thinking every day. It's wonderful that we have one day that we are thinking about, but it should be a daily matter that we are thinking about human rights. You know, like for our own story of leaving Iran and going to India and then coming to U.S., it's just the fact that we didn't have that right, you know. And when you listen to stories of refugee or asylum seeker or immigrant, the same story is being repeated, maybe differently. But really the root cause of all those movements and, you know, people leaving their country has to do with the fact that their basic human need, which is about the freedom, right to choosing how they want to worship or where they want to go, has been, infringed upon. So I really am not sure how more I can talk about this, except that human right is really the basic need. And if we feel wherever we go, we feel we belong and we are accepted and we are free, nobody wants to leave that situation, because that's the human need wherever we go.
Yeah, the human need. It's not optional. We need dignity. We need trust and safety. It's awfully hard to be happy and healthy and productive when we're not safe.
Exactly.
Yeah. So what can others do who wish to be aware of human rights more days of the year than this one? If people want to be defenders of the dignity that can't be taken away from us as humans, what can they do?
Well, I think the first and foremost is to familiarize ourselves with the situations. For example, in the case of persecution of Baha'is, it would be very nice to go on websites where there are news and information about the discrimination of the Baha'is in Iran and familiarize ourselves with the situation. Then we need to become like activists and take the pen and write. We can take the phone and contact our state officials, representatives in Congress, and tell them about the plight of the Baha'is in Iran and ask them to talk about the situation of the Baha'is. We can write to United Nations representatives. Iranians have representatives at UN. Write to them and protest to them about the plight of the Baha'i minority. But if we do not have ourselves enough information, we cannot talk about it. So it would be, first and foremost, is very important to familiarize ourselves with the Baha'i faith and the history and persecution of the Baha'is, and then become activists for them. And it is not just for the Baha'is, for every group that we think of, that any cause that we think, we can familiarize ourselves and then become activists for them.
That's a really clear answer. And for people who are listening and would like to learn more about what kinds of websites you can look at to get more information about the Baha'is and their oppression, I will post three such websites on newmainerspeak.com this evening. And so you be welcome to look there anytime. Did you have any additional ideas there, Parivash, for ways people can take action?
Really, I don't have ideas except what Nasser said. It is important that for any, you know, any group that they are being, you know, persecuted or they are having a harder time to really express their thought and be free, it would be good to stand by the side of people who are marginalized, no matter where they are. But I just wanted to again thank everybody who supported me during the hard time when my sister-in-law was in prison, with their prayers, with their positive thought. Thank you so much.
Yes, you're very much not alone.
Thank you.
Nasser and Parivash, you are both such warm, bright, and loving people. I see that you're grateful to have your First Amendment rights in a way that many of us never fully understand and embrace. And you use that freedom of speech as power for good. I'm sure your families are very proud of you and all that you do for others here and abroad. And thank you so much for being my guest today.
Thank you very much, Kate.
Thank you.
On this International Human Rights Day. Thank you all for listening. Please join us each week for similar interviews with diverse members of our community. If you'd like to hear this complete interview or interviews from previous weeks, please visit newmainerspeak.com and check out more related information at facebook.com/newmainerspeak. I'm Kate Manahan, closing today's program with a song the Rouhanis have selected for us. Can you introduce the song?
Yes, it is a song by Dan Seals, One Planet, One People, Please.
Seals and Croft. All right, thank you.
Light the world for you and for me. So why don't we reach out and be one planet, one people, please. One planet, one people,
one planet.